Greetings and welcome back to our continued series of Shurim on Daf Yomi. We're on Daf Yuvam Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and the new Mishnah, which is really Mishnah Gimel. It's a combination of Mishnah Gimel and Mishnah Dalet. So Mishnah Gimel reads as follows: Shesh Arayot Chamurot Mielu. There are six Arayot that are more severe than the 15 that we listed in the first Mishnah. Neshli Sa'od Lacherim Sarotein Mutarot. Because they can only marry other people, in other words, they never could have been married to the brother who died. Evidently, they were, in some sense, married to him, and that's why they're falling to the other brother, but they could not marry any of the brothers, and therefore, that sarota mutar, meaning that their marriage to this brother was never a marriage, and therefore, we don't consider their presence, and therefore, that sarot du avi, who are they? Imo, that we explained earlier, Imo refers to Imo Anusat Aviv, meaning his mother who was never married to his father. Because the next one is Eshet Aviv. Now, by the way, neither Imo, according to Rabbi Yehuda, could not marry any of the brothers, which means the original marriage could not have happened. So our Mishnah must be the Rabbi Yehuda. We saw that in the podcast. And Eshet Aviv, everyone will agree, could not have married any of the brothers, the wife of somebody's father, brothers. Ve'achot Aviv, right? So father's sister, aunt, father. Achotome Aviv, or a paternal sister. Ve'eshet Achi Aviv, or an aunt. In other words, father's brother's wife. And ve'eshet Achiv Me Aviv, or his paternal sister-in-law. Any of those could not have been married to any of the brothers, therefore their presence doesn't count, and therefore if they fall to Yibum in whatever way, they're not really falling to Yibum, and the other tzarot are open. Now, that's Mishnah Gimel. Going back to Mishnah Aleph, we have a machloket about the status of the tzarot. Matirin ha-tzarot l'achim etilel osrim. The statement that we made in the first Mishnah, the entire premise of the first sugya, that the tzarot are asur, is only based on Beit Hillel's read. Beit Shammai says that sarot are mutar, meaning that if a man has four wives and one of them is an erva to his brother and he dies, then that erva is part of Yibum, but the other sarot are chayim. Now, the result of that is as follows. If, according to Beit Shammai, if a man does chalitza on one of the sarot, the chalitza is significant. Because she was chayim chalitza. So therefore, chaltzu, Beit Shammai poslim na kunav etel machshirin. Therefore, if a man does chalitza on Tzarat Erva, then according to Beit Shammai, the chalitza is meaningful. She's now not allowed to marry Cohen. According to Beit Hillel, the chalitza is nothing because there's no chiyuv. Just there was a ceremony. It didn't mean anything. And therefore, she's still kosher lakuna. Now, on the flip side, nit yabmu, let's say the man does yibum with one of the Tzarot, Beit Shammai machshirin, Beit Hillel poslin. Very simple. Beit Hillel say the relationship is invalid, Beit Shammai says because it's Eshet Ach, Shalom Mach Mitzvah, and Beit Shammai says that it is acceptable. Now, that leads us to a curious observation of the Mishnah. Afa Pisha Elu Osrin Ve'Elu Matirin. And it's a broad statement about Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Even though Beit Shammai asserted, Hillel really asserted the Tzarot and Beit Shammai matir, Elu Poslin Ve'Elu Machshirin. And the result of that is that Beit Shammai pasul a tzara who got chalitza from kahuna Beit Hillel or machshir, and the flip, Beit Shammai or machshir a woman who got yibum and tzara who got yibum Beit Hillel or posel. Onimnu Beit Shammai milisan hashim Beit Hillel or Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. The schools would intermarry, which means, in some curious way, even though according to us this one may be an isur lav and maybe a halal and maybe and maybe even a mamzer, because after all, according to Beit Hillel, the tzarot are not allowed to marry the brother because it's their tzarat erva, and according to Beit Shammai, they're allowed to, and if they do yibum, the child is certainly a questionable status. Nonetheless, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel did not avoid marrying within the school, between the schools. Kol ha-ta'arot va-tme'ot shayu elu matarim ve-elu matamin donimnu osin ta'arot elu agav-elu. And in the second area, Beit Shammai and Hillel disagreed about many areas of Tumah v'Tahara. Nonetheless, they were willing to operate together and work with Taharot with each other, even though the standards were different. Now, the logistics of how they did it is one question. There's a more principled question here, which is, psak-wise, how is this able to work? And we're going to devote a lot of our attention to that today and in the next podcast. Now, let's begin by looking at Beit Shammai's Shita, which is not the mainstream Shita, of course, about Sarot. I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. My Talmud of Beit Shammai. Why do Beit Shammai say Sarot Eretz Yisrael Mutar? Dichtiv lo tia ish tamet achutz al Yizar. In the first pasuk on the page, the pasuk of Yibum, says that the wife of the mate should not be hachutza, outside, to another man. So chutza michal de'ika primit. He said chutza implies that there's one who's outside, and there's one who's more inside, meaning one who is more related. That's the erva. And in other words, the Torah says that even though there's one who's more inside, like a man's niece, who then falls to her own father, etc., nonetheless, there's a chutza, an outside one, that she's not allowed to marry somebody else. She's still zakuka. They need it for the following drasha. This is a machlok we'll get to much later in the Masachet, about whether if a Yevama goes and accepts Kiddushin from somebody on the outside, the machlok whether Kiddushin or Tofes. Rav says they're not Tofes. How does he know? She cannot be no nitzar. Lotia meaning lotehela. Havaya, she could have no valid relationship with somebody else, right? Now, Beit Shammai miktiv lachutz, chutzaktiv. Beit Shammai says, it doesn't say she shall not go to the outside, she shall not be an outsider, chutza, almost as like a feminine version. And therefore, Beit Shammai says that chutza does not point us to not marrying out of the family, but rather to her being defined as a chutza, meaning there's a pnimit, etc. Now, Beit Hillel, Beit Hillel says linguistically, Hachutza is like Lachutz. How do I know that? The Tanur Nechemya Omer, Kol Teva Shetzicha Lamed Bechilata, Itzel HaKatuv Hei Besofa. Anytime you have the Lakative Lamed, the one that says towards a certain place, instead the text puts a Lakative Hei as a suffix. Right? The Tanur Nechemya Shmuel, Kigon, and we listed some of the Psukim, Elim and Elima, Chanaima Chanaima, Mitzrayim Mitzrayima, Vilataima, Yerushalayim, Midbara, etc. These are all examples in the text where instead of saying Li Yerushalayim, it says Yerushalayim. We say it in modern, in colloquial Hebrew, where we don't say Ani Holech Labayit, we say Ani Holech Habayta. Good. Beit Shammai, so what is Beit Shammai? That explains why Beit Hillel says Achutza really is the proper way to say to the outside, and it refers to the lack of Kiddushin, and it doesn't mean that there's a case of two wives and one, even the outside one, even though the inside one is Pater, the outside one is still Zekukah, doesn't mean that. Means the lack of Kiddushin. Now, Beit Shammai, the Rabbi Yehuda Mara, Menalahu, where does Beit Shammai get this principle that there's no Kiddushin to Yevama? So, Mila Ish Zar Nafka. They get it from the fact that it says she cannot go to an Ish Zar. In other words, the text puts anybody outside of the family kind of outside her pale. Beit Hillel, Nami Tepik Luhu, Mila Ish Zar. So, why doesn't Beit Hillel learn it from there? And the answer is Enochinami, you're right. They do learn it from there. Ish Zar is a great place for everybody to learn it from. So chutz alamali, so let's go back to chutz, what do they do with that? L'rabbo tarusa, you know, instead of it defining the family structure that we're working with as having two wives, one closer, one further, says achutza means it's there to even say an arusa, man, betrothed the woman, and then died, she still is a kukalibum, because she is achutza. B'idach michutza hachutza, and Beit Shammai says, you're right, but the fact that it says hachutza is an extra notion, so we learn both things. The Idach, Beit Hillel says, Chutza, Chutza, La Mashmalahu. They don't find the difference between Chutza and Achutza to be significant enough to make an extra drasha. Good. Now, that's all Rabbi Shimon Pazi, who says that Beit Shammai and Hillel are disagreeing about a drasha. Rav Amar Tamayit of Beit Shammai has a reason which is more grounded in general rules of halacha. Tein Isur Chalal Isur. Because Isur can't be Chalal Isur, meaning a man's daughter. The minute she's born, she's ushered him as a daughter. Now she goes and marries his brother. So the Isur Eshet Ach can't fall on top of the Isur of Bito, which means that when the husband dies, she was never in the Parsha of Yibum that she should exempt the Tzarot. We just don't consider her presence here at all. Ein Isur Chalal Isur. Now, Tenach Echad Denasa Meit V'Chakach Masachai. Now, that will work in, let's say, the cases the Isser is Achot Isha. That will only work if first the brother who now died, brother number one, married his wife, which means the first relationship to this woman is Eshetach, and then you marry the sister, and then she becomes Achot Ishto. Lo ati Yisro, Achot Isha v'chayal Yisro Eshetach. Then I understand that Achot Isha does not come and attach itself to Eshetach. Let's say the living brother is the one who married first, and then the one who's going to die married. Right? So in that case, Ella, Nasa Chai, V'chakach Nasa Meit, Achot Isha Kadim, since the first Isra there is Achot Isha, because before she married your brother, she was already your wife's sister. Since the new Isra, according to you, cannot be Chal on her, which means she's only Achot Isha, therefore, when the brother dies and has a few wives, one of them is this one, so then the other ones are Tzarat Erva Shalav Mokom Mitzvah, right? Because according to you, there was no Isur Eshet Ach on this woman that's being lifted for Yibum, right? And therefore they're Mutter. So in other words, Rava's position is that the whole issue is based on the issue of Isur, and Isur Chal Isur. But of course, Ein Isur Chal Isur will not really work because many of the arayot that we have in our Mishnah, that Beit Shammai is going to be matir the tzarot, all of the tzarot, many of them are grounded in birth, not in some later thing like marriage, such as a woman marrying a brother and then her sister marrying the other brother. And as a result of that, they're always going to be coming in with the original Isur of Bito or of Achoto, Imo, or something like that. That's product of birth, and then Eshetach doesn't attach to them. So that's a more difficult approach. Good. Chaltzu Beit Shammai Poslim. So now Beit Shammai Posel, the woman from Kahuna, if they do Chalitza, well, that's kind of a no-brainer. Pshita. If we're going to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Amar Von Takelem, the Tzorot Shiyu Chaltzot, the Lomit Yabmot, Beit Hillel Machshirin. The point of this is to say that Beit Hillel Machshir, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri comes along and says, I got a suggestion. Let's make the chalutzat, the tzarat erva, ger chalitza, right? So that nobody will have any questions about the status of this relationship. So Kamash Balan, that Beit Hillel say no, that if somebody does chalitza in such a case of tzarat erva, it's so meaningless that they can still marry into the kuna. Good. Nityamu Beit Hillel posling. Now, hu atu lamali. So why do we have to add this last clause that if there was Yibum, Beit Hillel say it's no good? We know that. Because of the parallel construction. We said in the second clause that if they went ahead and done Chalitza, then Beit Hillel say it's meaningless. So they also said if they did Yibum, etc. Now, we're now going to get into the real meat of the whole issue of Beit Shammai versus Beit Hillel in a general sense. We have a Mishnah in Megillah. We studied it not too long ago. Megillah Nikrei Yudalef Yudbet Yudgimel Yudalef Tetvav. Megillah can be read on one of those 5 days. Depends where you live and what the circumstances. Lo pachot v'lo yoter. Amar le Rish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Now, Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan have the following conversation in Tiberias. I'll explain why I said that. Ikri kam lo titgodedu. Now, the Torah prohibited, and it is pasuk number 8 on the page. The Torah prohibited self-mutilation in the context of mourning, which is clearly some sort of pagan practice. It says, lo titgodedu. However, there's a drasha on this, which is, lo ta'asu agudot agudot. You should not make yourself into separate groups, schisms, right? So that you act differently. So now, how can we have a mitzvah of Megillah that's on different days, different places? It sounds like there's 5 different Torahs going on. So, hi, lo titgodin in my gufei. It was a time out. Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, lo titgodedu is needed for its own purpose to say you're not allowed to scratch up your head when, and mutilate your head when somebody's when you're mourning. De'amar achmona, lo tasu chavur almeit. De'im ken le'makra, lo titgodedu. Then it should have said lo titgodedu in the hefil. My titgodedu, why does it say lo titgodedu in the reflexive? It's also there for the other thing. Don't make yourselves into agudot. Reflects it. So maybe the whole pasuk is just coming there to say, not anything about mutilating, which, by the way, in the context of the pasuk, look at pasuk number 8 on the page, it's clearly having to do with mourning rituals. Again, in Makra, lo tagod. Then it should have said lo tagod. My lo titgodud or shvamin atarti. So lo titgodud is there to teach both the self-mutilation, but also the creating groups. Now, Amarle, Adkan lo shanita, makom shenagul asot malacha bereb psachim ad chatzot osim, makom shenagul shlo asot ein osim. Right, so Rabbi Yochanan said back to Rish Lakish, why are you so bothered that we have Megillah being read on different days? After all, we have a Mishnah that we all know about some towns having the minig not to do Malach on Erev Pesach in the morning, and some towns having the minig, yes, to do Malach. So Amalei Amina Lachana Isura, the Amar of Shem Bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, Kaimin Yerah Purim Bizmanehem, Zvanim Arbeitik Malahem, Chachamim. In other words, Rish Lakish said, I'm raising to you a question that involves a real Isra, a real mitzvah of Megillah. Ve'ata marli minhaga. Now you're challenging me with a minig, you're answering me with a minig to say, aha, with the minhagim in different towns? Ve'atam lavi surahave. Well, time out, Rabbi Yochanan says. Is there no Isra involved in doing Malacha on Erev Pesach? But none. Ve'at shamay osrin, ve'tol matirin. This has to do with Malacha, doing Malacha the night of the 14th, the night of what we call Bedika Chametz night. So amarle, hatam haroel, mer Malacha mutleidle. So Rish Lakish said back, there's nothing wrong if you don't do malacha there, because if you don't do malacha, people won't know that it's because you're abiding by some sort of prohibition. They might just think you don't have any work. This is really why we want to get to it, is that here you have Beit Shammai and Behil having opposite positions about the status of the tzarot. So, so Rish Lakish answers back and says that, you think that Beit Shammai actually acted on that? Beit Shammai had a theory, but in practice they accepted Beit Hillel's position. Lo asu Beit Shammai kidivrayim. Rabbi Yochanan bar asu v'asu. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, indeed Beit Shammai did act by their own principle. V'plugta d'Rabbi Shmuel. And the same machloket happening in Tiberias is happening also on the Tigris River. The Rav Omer lo asu, Shmuel Amar asu v'asu. Shmuel, like Rabbi Yochanan, says Beit Shammai acted based on their own principles, and Rav says no, that was their idea, but they acted like Beit Hillel. Good. Now, Amak, now let's ask our question. When is it that Beit Shammai supposedly did or did not act upon their own principles different from Beit Hillel? Right? And we have the following scenario. There's an important Gemara in Eruvin, who studied it over a year ago, Gemara in Eruvin, Daf Yud Gimel, tells the story that for 2.5 years there was a machloka between Beit Shammai and Hillel, each saying the halacha should follow our position, until a bat kol came out and said, Eilu ba'ilu divrei Elohim chayim, v'alacha ki Beit Hillel. So the psak is like Beit Hillel. So now, when is it that Beit Shammai and Hillel were disagreeing, and Beit Shammai perhaps were practicing their own position or not? Let's see. Eimat. Eilai makot and bat kol, if you claim it was before the bat kol, why would Rav, Rish Lakish, and Rav say they didn't practice their own thing? Why would they not practice their own thing? Lachar bat kol must have been after the bat kol. So my tamar madam asu. So then why would Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan say they continued to practice even after the heavenly voice came out and said Alachar bat hillel? If I tell me korim bat kol, if I tell me lachar bat kol, I can answer every equation either way. If you want to say that it was before the bat kol, chagon the Beit Hillel ruba, then why would Beit Shammai have caved in, as it were? Because they happen to be in a Beit Din where Beit Hillel was the majority.
The reason for the position says they did not practice their own position was because they were outvoted.
And the position that says that they did not, that they continue to practice their own approach, was because we only vote with the majority of the Beit Din when they're all of equal wisdom and capabilities. Beit Shammai were sharper people, and therefore they didn't accept the majority rule, according to this position. You could say this whole thing happened after the Bat Kol. The one who says they caved in, Nafka Batko, because there was a Batko. Manda Masu, according to the opinion that says that they really did continue to maintain the position, Rabbi Yeshua. So if you recall, the very, very famous Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tet, known as the Tanarosh Alachnoi, Rabbi Eliezer, claims that his position on Taharot is the heavenly correct position. And the Chachamim disagree with him, and Rabbi Yeshua finally stands up and says the famous statement, Lo Bashamayimi, after a Bat Kol came out and said, Halacha Gabisha Milak Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua's position is we don't pay attention to a Bat Kol. A voice from heaven doesn't play a role in Pasuking Halacha. So that would mean that the position that says this entire dispute happened after the Bat Kol, and nonetheless, Beit Shammai maintained their own position because they held like Rabbi Yeshua later held, which is we don't pay attention to a Bat Kol. Good. Now, Umadam Asu, Karin and Kanlotit go to do. But in any case, if Beit Shammai did maintain their own position in practice, then why is there no problem of Lotit go to do? So Lotas Ogodogodor Amar Abaye. So Abaye has one answer to this, which is Ki Amrin Lotit Godu Gonshte Bate Dinim Beirachat. So you have two Bate Din in one city. Halalu Morim Kediver Beit Shammai, Halalu Morim Kediver Beit Hillel. One accepts Beit Shammai's position, one accepts Beit Hillel's position. One is Oser, one is Matar, etc. But if they're in two different cities, there's nothing that says that I have to abide by the Beit Din of another city just to prevent schisms. This is our city. So Rava turns to Abaye and says, you know, think about it. Beit Shammai Hillel's dispute is not a local dispute within a specific Beit Din or range of Beit Din. It's part of the ongoing public halacha. And as such, their machloket is like two courts in one city. Sorry, two courts in two cities. Ela Amar Rava Ki Amrina, sorry, two courts in one city, right? Because everybody has equal access to Beit Shammai Hillel. Ela Amar Rava Ki Amrina Lotit Godudu, so when do we say Lotit Godudu is a problem? Kungon Beit Din Be'ir Achat. You have a Beit Din in one city. Chlag Morin Ki Beit Shammai, Chlag Morin Ki Beit Hillel. Members of the court, some of them are ruling and teaching and instructing like Beit Shammai, and the others are instructing like Beit Hillel. But Rava says, if you have two Bat Tedin in one city, and each Beit Din is ruling differently, that's not a problem of Lotit Godudu. So Lotit Godudu is not a halacha about the city's position, but rather about the integrity of the Beit Din. Good. Now, Toshma. B'mkomosh Rav Eliezer hayu kortim aitzim la'asot pachamim b'shabbat, la'asot barzel, la'asot barzel. This is Rav Eliezer's famous shita, the beginning of Perak Rav Eliezer in Shabbat. Rav Eliezer holds that not only is Brit Milah done on Shabbat, but any malacha needed to support Brit Milah, even things that could have been done before Shabbat may be done on Shabbat. So therefore, you could cut down a tree, and you could burn it to create ashes in order to make metal, in order to make the knife for the Brit Milah, all of that on Shabbat. And they say in Rav Eliezer's town, indeed, that's what they did. Thus proving that there is no issue of Lotit Godudu as long as it's within one Beit Din. There's a consistent position. Right? B'mkomosho b'yosei glili, you ochlim basar of b'chalav. Well, b'yosei glili was of the position that there is no gzeira of chicken and milk, and therefore in his town people ate chicken and milk. So obviously, it was in Rav Eliezer's town, Lod, they would cut trees down for on Shabbos to make a fire and to make coals in order to forge the metal, but not in Rabbi Kiva's town, because in Rabbi Kiva's town in Bnei Brak, what was his position? Anything you could have done Friday is not Docha Shabbos, right? Which means that behind my tiyuvta mekamotshani. After all, how is this proving? How is this proving anything? We just got through saying that in Batei Din in different cities can rule differently, and that's not a problem of Lotit Godudu. So that's exactly what you just quoted me. When Bnei Brak, Lod, Yossi Aglili's town, Udikarila, my Karila, so why do you even bring it up? I might think that because Shabbat is so chamor, it's the issue of chopping down the trees, or Blazer, in the context of Mila, Shabbat is so severe that I might consider it the whole world to be one town for that purpose. We hear one more story. There will be a vow, famous. Sorry, Rishum and Levi. Rishum and Levi, first generation of Mora, was of the opinion of Pasuk like Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon, who late lay muktzah on Shabbos, if a candle goes out, you can carry the candle. I mean, Taltel Shraga. He came to Rabbi Yochanan, who holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Sheesh lo muktzah. Therefore, if a candle is lit for Shabbat and it goes out on Shabbat, you may not carry it. Rabbi Yochanan lo mahav metalto shraga. So when he came to Rabbi Yochanan's town, he wouldn't carry move a candle in such a circumstance. Right? Vayim my kusha. Why is this a challenge at all? After all, we said places are each place is different; it stands alone. Anachi kamer. This is what we're saying. Rabbi Avahu enchi aviracha. How could Rabbi Avahu do this? How could he act differently in different towns? The answer was Rabbi Avahu or Rabbi Shua ben Levi Sferle. He really held like Rabbi Shua ben Levi personally, since he held really there is no problem. Right. When he came to Tiberias, he would not carry a candle out of kavod for Rabbi Yochanan, who was the rabbi of the town. Good. But what about Rabbi Avahu's servant, who was moving the candle? He might think, it's okay to move a candle, he'll end up moving to Rabbi Yochanan's town. The answer is, he would tell his Eved, in this house you can't carry the candle, in that house you can. And the Eved is a good Eved. He follows exactly what his master tells him. There is no problem of Lotzit go to do in such a circumstance. Everybody should have a wonderful day, and we will continue in our study of the first paragraph of Amos.